Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing? This is Taz, and thank you for downloading this edition of My Human Podcast Machine. And going to talk about Tough Enough 1 in a few seconds. I want to take care of a little business, talk about my boys, Mack Weldon, dropping 20% off of anything on their website. Check this out, Mack Weldon, the highest quality shirts, socks, underwear you're going to find any place. No doubt about it. Not many guys like walking up to the cash register saying, hey, I want to buy these underwear. It's kind of an embarrassing type deal. Mack Weldon's going to help you out. MackWeldon.com. It's got you covered. Boxer briefs, trunks, undershirts. They are all legit, highest quality you're going to find. I myself utilize my own promo code, my own 20% off. I type in TAZ at checkout. Boom, I get 20% off. Go to MackWeldon.com, type promo code TAZ, get 20% off. Mack Weldon, that's MackWeldon.com, type TAZ, get 20% off, and take care of your drawers.
Put your pants back on.
From the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, New York,
the former three-time world heavyweight champion.
If you can survive, if I let you.
He is the human suplex machine.
Now Taz is dominating the audio world with his award-winning human podcast machine.
Welcome.
Hey, this is the Fantasy Draft Edition. Love this reaction show.
For a celebrity edition of HPM.
The human podcast machine.
Try to keep up.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
This is Taz. Human Podcast Machine.
Welcome, 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 guys. Here we go, here we go. This is the Human Podcast Machine. I am Taz, and would like to thank you, as I said, in the beginning of this particular, well, the actual cold open of this show, for downloading and or subscribing to my dealio. I do appreciate it. The show's going really well, and I'm not one to come out here and boast about all the downloads and all that stuff. That's not my style. It's about every show. I got to be better than the last show. Got to give entertainment. Got to have fun. Got to give some insight. I don't want to be a douche, but sometimes you got to be in a. What are you laughing at, Seth? What the hell are you laughing at? It's a douche.
You don't want to be a douche.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to be a douche.
All right, I'll do your dirty work. Taz has really good numbers. He's doing great.
Stop.
He's the man.
I'm doing all right. It's not.
His middle name is Play It.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's obviously all of you guys out there listening, it's definitely not because of you, Seth. It's because of the fan base out there, basically, all my supporters. And people believed in me, old school ECW fans or fans of mine from the WWE when I was a broadcaster there and all that stuff. And the TNA fans, that when I was in TNA. So
how long have you been in this business? 5, 10 years?
A little while. But the Tough Enough thing, and we're going to get into that in a minute, but Tough Enough, I mean, the original Tough Enough is getting just so much talk past several weeks because obviously WWE announced that the new Tough Enough will be dropping, coming out in the summertime. So, I think that it's a situation where WWE Network, they do the right thing by pumping out all the original Tough Enough, or the Tough Enough 1, Tough Enough 2, I should say, 3. I don't even know what number they were up to. I think the last one they did before this new one, this rebirth, was when Steve Austin hosted, right? I think that was probably the last one.
Correct.
Right, and that was cool. I used to watch it. I really enjoyed that show. But I got to tell you, I have a lot of memories of the original Tough Enough. And I'm going to bring you guys kind of behind the scenes of, how I was approached about it, how that all went about, and everything with that. I mean, it's actually very intriguing. Seth is sitting here, and he's pushing buttons and making sure I sound pretty on the air.
Yeah, I got you a fan, too, which you just pointed on yourself, so I'm sitting here sweating while you're nice and cool.
At least I have one fan. You would think that CBS Radio can afford friggin' central air condition, right? It's just that I do my show so early, right? And the ACs don't turn on until, what, in the morning, like 9 a.m.?
They're giving you all their money. That's why they can't afford it.
Kayfabe. All right, so anyway. But let me tell you, before we get into the tough thing, it's about my boys over at Bombfell. Because, got to help you out, Seth, because you look like a stiff all the time. And, you get your own personal styling service, your own stylist to help you look like a stud instead of a slug. That's what Bombfell's about, baby. I'm telling you. The guys over there at Bombfell, look, they know that dudes hate the shop. but they know you want to look good in your daily life. Well, my crew over there at Bonfell, they're going to cover you. They got you covered. They got me covered. All you do is give your height, your weight, your measurements, the places you like to shop, you know, your style that you like to shop. Unlike Seth, where he shops like an Army Navy store.
Hey, remember I got those. Kids that I pay for. I can't worry about clothes anymore.
You're paying for kids now. But you know what? Bonfell could help you, Seth, because it's aimed to guys like you that are too busy, that got 25 kids in the house. And also, you could set your budget on what you're willing to pay for. And the stuff that you keep once they send it to your doorstep, that's the stuff you pay for. The gear that you send back, you don't pay for it. Bonfell's a very flexible, you know, really flexible service, very simple to understand. They cover all shipping and returns, no hidden fees of any kind. Like I said, you only pay for the clothes you keep. You have 10 days to try on the clothes you receive. That comes to your doorstep, as I said. You keep what you want, you return the rest, no gimmicks, that's it. So put your wardrobe on autopilot and check my name out at the tail end of this. Go to bonfell.com/Taz. And like I said, put your wardrobe on autopilot, bonfell.com/Taz.
My birthday's coming up, buddy.
I'm getting you nothing. So like I was saying about Tough Enough, right? So this whole thing was crazy back in the day, you know, because I started to do other things for WWE, like very slowly. I was wrestling, and then they saw something else in me as a character outside of the ring, because my in-ring stuff was, I felt I was very proud of, and fans dug it. But you know, the powers that be back then in WWE, maybe they didn't think I was all that and a bag of chips. So I wasn't getting the monster push. And, you know, I've handled that on my show here in Taz Tales and stuff like that. We've talked about that stuff, but
yes, sir.
There was an opportunity and where I was offered to be part of this new reality show called Tough Enough. Now, reality TV back then, now what year was Tough Enough? It was probably... You're a crack producer, so I'm sure you have all that notes.
Oh, yeah, I got all the notes.
Oh, yeah. Well, folks, just stand by. He'll get that information to us in about 10 minutes. But I'll just talk as he looks for that. And you'd think he would know that by the time he knew we were doing a show. So what happened was, it was early 2000s, and here's the dealio, okay? They come to me and say, look, Taz, it was a very impromptu meeting. It wasn't like a formal meeting. Hey, we're going to make you this big offer. It wasn't like that. It was actually pretty laid back. And they said it was like they were trying this new thing out. And back then, it was... You know, I think like what was the show on MTV? Real World.
Real World, yes.
was hot for a few years, and a couple other reality shows were starting to become very popular.
Side note: I auditioned for season two.
Season two of what? Real World?
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
I didn't make it.
That's all right. But see, look, you wouldn't be in a position you're in right now.
True.
This amazing position you have.
I would have been on heroin under a bridge somewhere. Most likely.
You wouldn't be in this great spot, Seth, that you're in right now.
Sweating in the studio.
With me.
Yes.
As I have these giant fans blowing on my body. It's unbelievable. And anyway, so...
2001, buddy. 2001.
2001, that Tough Enough one. As I said, early 2000s. You got to put a qualifier on things. I blanket it, because I'm a pro with saying early 2000s, because I remembered that much.
I learn from you every day.
Of course. So the thing is, they come to me about this thing, and I'm like, well, what is... They didn't tell me the name. Says, well, we're going to try and find a wrestler. Well, you know, we're going to do a reality show where we're looking for the next WWE, at the time it was WWF, the next WWF superstar. I looked at, it was Kevin Dunn at the time, he's senior executive vice president. I don't remember his title. He's got a very long, heavy title. I said, you know, a lot of us called him KD. I said, KD, I don't know if I'm into that. He goes, what do you mean? He just starts laughing. I go, I'm not into this. You're going to find some fan just to be a wrestler. I busted my ass to get to this point, and so the whole locker room has, all the men and women that have made it to this point in any company, you know. I mean, again, this was me being old school, and it was years ago, and having this dinosaur brain back then and not looking past the bigger picture. And he said to me, he goes, listen, man, you can't think that way. You know, it's about TV. It's about entertainment, and we want to go to our fan base and find the next hidden star. It's real TV. It's reality TV. And it wasn't like he was trying to convince me, like he was begging me to do this. It wasn't like that. I was respectful. It was just, I was a little, as the wrestler in me was like, what, are you kidding me? You know, there's plenty of guys out there working, paying their dues on the independent scene and, you know, and get dark matches and try out and let them go to the wrestling school, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, no, do we want to, he's like, we're going to do a TV show here, dude. Like, he's trying to explain to me the entertainment part. And I learned from him in that moment, because he basically said to me, Kevin said, you know, look, you have to try to branch out. It's not just about the in-ring product, but we're an entertainment company. You know, and he kind of gave me that lesson, you know, that I'm not in the smoky bingo hall no more. You know what I mean? And it was a lesson I learned in a 20-minute conversation with this guy, and it was very cool. And I'm like, all right, well, what do you need me to do? Because we want you to just be real and help train guys. And I go, I'm the only trainer? He goes, no, there'll be other trainers. There'll be a few other ones. He didn't tell me who they were.
I mean, that's perfect casting, though. Come on, people know you and your experience. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean,
right.
They're very smart to pick you to do that.
Thank you. And it ended up working out, but that's what I want to talk about in this podcast about Tough Enough 1, was it was not all rainbows and butterflies behind the scenes. You know, I'll tell you what, man, it was cool. Like, when we did the casting for it, we were like, oh, man, I don't know if it was the Manhattan Center, somewhere here in Manhattan. I can't remember where it was. That's right, Seth. Don't kill yourself trying to find out. It's okay, buddy. Don't just sit there and look at your fingers. So, guy's sitting in the studio looking at his fingers. You know,
I got nice hands. I could be a hand model.
Your hand model. Yeah. So that's Seinfeld. So anyway, so I remember like being in cast that doing the casting thing, and I was one of the judges, and guys would go in the ring and they'd show their athleticism and whatnot. And I remember sitting there getting madder and madder and madder, thinking, I busted my ass for years, sacrificed my body, my personal life, my wife, the sacrifices she went through, all of us, my family, everything, to get to this point. And I'm sitting here in a chair with cameras around me, with a ring, with these young kids trying to just pole vault over the pay your dues part of the business. It infuriated the hell out of me. And the WWE front office knew that. And guess what? They loved it. Because they knew they'd get a real pissed off point of view from me, and a very, you know, the hard ass drill instructor persona I had in that show was not a work. It was me. You know, what are you looking at your phone? What are you doing? What's up?
Oh, you're telling me to do research. I don't know. You know, that's awesome. That you did. They picked you for Tough Enough.
Okay, you said that already. Great. What else you got? Is that it? You're done?
No. they were paying you for this, right?
Of course they were paying me
for
this. Yeah.
You should have been happy then. What's your problem? Like, oh, yeah, these guys paying you. Oh, by the way, we're going to give you X amount of dollars. I don't care. These guys got to pay their dues.
You know, that's a good point. I got to say, touche.
Jesus.
I've never been told that like that.
You're angry about everything. Oh, we're going to pay you? Oh, I'm so pissed off. How much? Oh, that's great, but I'm still angry.
Okay, you're abusing me on my own show. That's not very nice.
Well, because, you know, you bite my hand that feeds you.
I know, you're making a good point. But I gave them good TV.
Yes. No,
I didn't mean to give them good TV. I was really mad. I was mad all the time during Tough Enough. Because I was pulled off the road where I couldn't go wrestle and make a little more money, and I wanted to wrestle, but they wanted me part of this thing, which I knew was great exposure. Don't get me wrong. I knew it was great exposure. I wasn't that dumb. I wasn't that much of a dinosaur, but the wrestler in me, I was the drill instructor, like I said. And they didn't say, Taz, we want you to be the heel instructor. We want you to be the mean guy. And Al Snow will be the babyface, because that's what ended up happening. And I'll get into that in a little bit about Al Snow, because there are a lot of things that people didn't know what happened behind the scenes, you know. And the thing is, man, it would just drive me nuts. And if you remember, there was that infamous line when I flipped out, left the judging table, whatever it was. But this was before the show started, before these kids got in the house, the casting gimmick. Whatever. I don't know if there was a casting show. I don't know what it was.
Casting special.
There you go. Yeah. So I remember getting up, and many of you might remember me getting up and storming, and they had a camera following me in the back. I mean, in the locker room area, whatever, the holding area, and these kids were, like, all tired. A lot of them were waiting a lot of hours to get in. Like you see now years later on, like, American Idol and stuff, where you got to sit around and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And word got to me during one of the breaks that the potential contestants and these kids, these students, were pissed off because they had to wait so long to get their turn. And I remember looking, and Vince McMahon was there, like, working behind the scenes, like, you know, producing this thing, And I said, hey, Vince, did I hear this right? And he goes, yeah. I go, can I just go, like, cut a promo on these freaking kids? Because I'm legitimately pissed off. He goes, give me 3 minutes. We'll get a camera on. That's exactly how that happened. And he goes, I love it. Do whatever you got to do. I don't care. Say whatever you want. Go for it. And that was awesome. Vince just let me be. And I did. And there was the infamous line where I said, if you don't believe in God, start. I think I said that there in that moment when I caught a promo on these kids and I was yelling at them and I was wearing my cool XFL stuff. Uh-huh. That was the coolest part of that era because the XFL was cranking and obviously didn't do well. It you know, ended up failing.
I went to some games.
But we, the talent, used to get so much free swag. I had so much Hitman, Outlaw hats, Memphis, Schnabitz, Furnham, whatever they're called, T-shirts. I had all the stuff. So I had my New York Hitman shirt on. And I remember going in there and just going, oh, I had a hat on. Look, I got a hat on. That's a long story. you know that joke? You don't know. So, it looked good with a hat on. So, if Johnny Brennan was here from the Jerky Boys, he'd get it. So, and I don't remember if I had a hat or a shirt on, but I had a Hitman paraphernalia apparel on. And I went in there. Do you remember the line and I cut a promo on them? You don't remember?
No. But you can reenact it right now.
You think the janitor's walking around here? He could jump in on his show. Maybe he knows more. Hey,
do me a favor. He can come in here and sweat with you if he wants.
Jiminy crickets. So what happens is, I was so happy I got to vent on these guys, on these kids, and they did not know I was coming in there, and I basically screamed at them saying they're a bunch of entitled spoiled brats, I went nuts on them, and I was legitimately pissed off at them. And it ends up, I don't remember who picked the casting. I gave input on who I thought should have been in. It was a long time ago. But then once they got into the house, I kind of didn't hear nothing for a few weeks. Like, once they picked them, like, I wasn't involved. And then I remember getting a call, like, 3 or 4 days prior. And they said, Taz, we're pulling you off a couple of shows. We need you to come to Connecticut because the house was in Connecticut. They wanted it close to the TV studio to make production seamless and easy. There wasn't a lot of money put into Tough Enough 1 because it was a test. You know, they just wanted to try it out. And it was, so there wasn't like this insane production behind Tough Enough 1. And I'll get into where it was shot, how it was shot, and all that stuff.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah, sure.
How long did it take you to get your break in wrestling? How many years?
I did not start. I don't. Depends what you mean. Break.
Like, just, you know, when you felt like you made it.
I felt. That's a good question. I felt like I made it after about, I don't know, 6-7 years, and you know.
And these kids were waiting for what? 2-3 hours.
That's
4 or 5 hours.
That's why I got hot. That's why I got pissed.
Well, it's funny.
Yeah, you know, and that was it, and you know, it just it got me pissed, and so anyway, so when they cast the whole deal and all this stuff, I was working, you know, for WWE. I was doing all this stuff. I knew I was going to be part of the show, but like I really, not that I didn't care, but it's like I'm a machine. You know, when you tell me I got to work, I'm there. You got to go work a spot show and you know, whatever.
I want time. Tell me time.
In Houston. Yeah, you got to go work. You're working TV in San Diego. Okay, good. We're doing a SmackDown in Calgary. Okay, good. I'm there. You know, hey, Taz, we need you in Connecticut because we're doing Tough Enough casting. We need Manhattan for Tough Enough casting. Okay, good. I'm there. I don't think about next week. I think about the now. In the now.
Right here in the studio.
Exactly. So that's how I work. I live every day like it's my last. That's my deal. That's my thing, right? I mean, to my detriment at times, but so anyway. So what happens is they say to me, "Well, look it, we need you to come to this house in Connecticut." So I go, "What do you guys got them in some kind of a mansion?" They go, "Well, yeah, kind of." I'm like, "Oh my god!" So it's like
should have sent them to Calgary for the Hulk dungeon. They should have sent them.
Yeah. So they, I said, "What do you need me to do?" They said, "Come to drive to the studio, and then we're gonna pick you up in a Humvee and take you to the house." I go, "A Humvee?" They go, "Yeah." I go, okay. And the dude was like, I had to get there early. It had to be like 7 a.m. I get to the studio. We jump in this crazy military, like a legitimate Army or National Guard Humvee, right? not an H2 Hummer. Like, this is the real thing. I never was in one of these things before in my whole life, right? And I get in this thing. It's the most uncomfortable friggin' thing. It's like you're sitting on bricks. And I'm like, I have a whole new respect for our fighting forces, you know, of the United States Army or any military service, for that matter, that drives in Humvees on a regular basis. These things are not comfortable, the real ones. So the house that they put these kids in, they rented, was only literally, this is what no one knew, it had to be, no lie, 4 or 5 miles. That was about it. In Stanford, from the TV studio and Titan Towers. So That's how close it was.
Makes sense.
And it's in this warehouse, this little warehouse, not a big warehouse. I'm sorry, the dojo, the gym was in there. Let me back up. The house was not in the warehouse. That'd be kind of stupid. The house was near the warehouse, which was all near the studio, all in proximity of 4 or 5 miles. Everything was so close. So they had me pull up to this house, and I'm in the passenger seat of this Hummer. And they say, okay, we got to back up. We want to get a shot. The cameras aren't rolling yet. The kids are still sleeping. I go, what? They go, yeah, we want you to barge into the house and just go crazy on them and scare the piss out of them. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I go, are there any of them that are like, you know, that you guys don't like or that's a little bit of a douche? Because they had hidden cameras on them. And, you know, they knew they were on camera, like Big Brother does and stuff like
sure.
that. You know, so and I think it was the kid, Daryl, the big, giant kid. You know, he was big, huge kid, and he was.
See, the one who couldn't run and everything.
Yeah. But he had an attitude on him. The guy had like a legitimate attitude.
He was a giant, so he thought, "I'm a big guy. I'm going
to
make it."
And he was young and mature, and he was trying to get attention. And he did. He did get attention.
Where is he now?
I don't know. So what happens is,
I'm gonna look him up.
They tell me about the cat, right? I'm like, all right. And they tell me about all these guys. They give me a quick overview of everyone in the house, and I'm halfway listening. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. I need to suck down more coffee. Look, just tell me when we're rolling. They lav me up. They put a mic on me, the whole thing. And we roll back up. They're all sleeping. And then I just barge in the house. And you guys saw it on TV. I mean, and I start ripping down. There was a Goldberg poster. And I ripped that down off the wall. Someone had a Goldberg poster. They did. And I'm like, yeah, wrong company. Whatever. It was all ad-lib. The whole thing. I had no idea it was a Goldberg poster. The whole thing was ad-lib. I mean, and I just went off of them. Tell them all get out of bed, blah, blah, blah. It was just like your boot camp type thing. And then we went out. I took them nearby to some little park and had them run and do all these drills, and I don't remember everything we did.
Did you make up that stuff on the fly?
Some of it I did. Some of it I didn't because we had to get a camera shot.
Right.
But these kids were pissed, man. They were pissed. They were scared, starstruck, and just like taken aback. So all those emotions ran through them. And if you guys watch it back on the WWE Network, you'll see the shock and awe on their faces in their bedrooms. You know, so it was very funny. And then, wait, do we got to take a break or what? And then I'll come back and talk about Al Snow. And
we talked about how successful you are, so that means, you have a lot of sponsors.
I have a lot of sponsors. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. I'm going to give you more about the behind the scenes of Tough Enough One, talk a little about what happened with me and Al Snow. Sit tight. Be right back. I'm Taz. Chill out. So let me ask you a question. You think we do the show for free, right? It's just like for free because you downloaded it. Well, it's time to pay the bills. Relax. I want to talk about Audible.com. I'm a big fan of this, and I'll tell you what. They got a special offer for you, my fans, my listeners, supporters of HBM. Check this out. Audible is offering all listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free, check this out, 30-day trial membership. Not only does Audible have over 180,000 titles to choose from fiction, nonfiction, bestsellers, every category imaginable, but check this out, tons of wrestling content on there. Free apps for iPhones, iPad, Android, Windows Phone. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/TAZ and choose from over 180,000 titles. Download a title free and start listening. Yo, it's that easy. Go to audiblepodcast.com/TAZ. That's audiblepodcast.com/TAZ and get started today. All right. Welcome back to the Human Podcast Machine. Talking about Tough Enough One, the behind the scenes, pulling back the old curtain gimmick. And love that cliche. And this is Taz, by the way. And Seth has got a live mic. He's bouncing around over in the studio doing all sorts of stuff. And you know, I did tweet out the other day, the other morning, asking you all that follow me on Twitter any questions about Tough Enough One. So I know, Seth, you'll be hitting me with some of those questions while I'm talking here.
Sure.
So and then we're going to get into more details about. So what happened was they went from I had them training in this park and all this stuff, and then they went over to the to the warehouse, the actual training center. The training center was just, they rented out a small warehouse, put a pipe and drape curtain, the WWE did, where it was just enough to fit a ring, a small locker room for men and women, I believe, and a little office where the trainers could do whatever they got to do, in a bathroom. And then on the other side of this curtain was like production people, and not a lot of them. I mean, this was skull and bones. The skull and bones, what's the expression? When it's not a lot. Like, it's not skull and bones.
Bare bones?
Bare bones.
Oh, man.
Bones, Thugs, and Harmony.
Yeah, I like that. I see you at the crossroads.
John Bone Jones. What's his name?
He's doing lines in the bathroom.
I'm saying, oh, come on. That's not nice. Yeah, but anyway.
It's true.
It's probably easy. What's John
Bone? I digress. Man.
I digress, ladies and gentlemen. I digress.
I own that word.
Stop it. So anyways. So they had this little warehouse gimmick. So I walk in. To me, it was like the Taj Mahal. I'm like, God, this is pretty badass. You know, I thought it was awesome. I mean, compared to how they upgraded the WWE Tough Enough over the years, was much better. This was the first gimmick, you know. So
I have a question for you before we get to any other questions.
Yeah.
How does that compare to your House of Hardcore? What was that set up like?
Well, you know,
I mean, not to get it all into that.
No, it's all good, bro. No, listen, man, it's a good question. The House of Hardcore and ECW, all kidding aside, was legit. I mean, we had a nice warehouse. It was a nice building. We kept it so clean. The students cleaned it. I was a stickler with that. I wanted it immaculate. I felt like you have to train somewhere. It needs to be clean and sanitary. Our mat was always clean with antibacterial disinfectant so you didn't get ringworm or mat, you know, any kind
staff
of mat
infection.
Disease, staff infection. You're a former amateur wrestler. You know what that's like. In
sure.
a wrestling room, you can get, you know, definitely get ringworm and staff. So I always was terrified of that. I didn't want no one to get that on my watch in my dojo. And that's why you were not, one of the rules in the House of Hardcore, not to get off topic here, was you were not allowed to walk into school and get in the ring with your street shoes. You had to wear wrestling boots or amateur wrestling shoes or boxing shoes. You could not wear street shoes. I didn't want those germs from the street, you know, in the ring. And I was a stickler with that stuff. The bathroom was very clean. I had an office. Perry Saturn had an office. And it was just, we put up sheetrock and painted it, and it was nothing fancy. And in the front office was like a reception area, and Bully Ray did a lot of work for promotion there. And Mikey Whipwreck had a desk there also. So we had a good setup. I got to say, it wasn't now, when I got broken in with Johnny Rods, that's a whole different story. You know, in Brooklyn, I mean, before Gleason's Gym, I'm talking about, I was in a horrible dojo with Rods. Place was a dump. You know, and at two places he was in, they were both dumps. And then he went to Gleason's Gym. It was much better. But, you know, so I remember, though, that the original places when I got trained with Johnny Rods, it was almost like the old, Rocky movies, like Rocky Balboa and Rocky One, or where you saw Clubber Lang training, you know, that type of thing, you know what I mean? So, but anyway, so at Tough Enough 1, it was like, I saw this little locker room they had for them, and they had cameras everywhere, hidden cameras, and the more I saw this stuff and like catering, the more pissed off I got.
I knew you were saying that.
I was just getting angry. I'm like, what are we doing here?
You had some bagels and some donuts and stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I'll partake in a bagel. I scoop it out so it's low carb, but yes. You know, but no. So anyway, tell me, are there any questions anyway? Give me a couple of good questions on Twitter here.
I got a good one here from OGMCHL. I guess that's Michael. He said, at Empire.
Hold on. This is all Tough Enough One questions, right? I don't want a whole bunch of
this is about your Mack Weldon underwear, this one.
I love Mack Weldon. Go ahead.
Why were you such an asshole on Tough Enough? Don't get mad at me. This is his question. I was a big fan of yours, still am, but it was like, all right, can Taz chill? Laugh my ass off.
Did he type
laugh my ass off?
Oh, so he's got the vernacular on Twitter.
Yeah, he knows all the slang. SMH.
I kind of covered why I was an asshole, and I was. I mean, because I was a little bit angry. I mean, because I felt these kids were entitled, and it's a good question that he asked.
Whose idea was it for you to be on Tough Enough?
It's
probably Vince. Right?
Probably Vince and all stuff. But Kevin Dunn and Vince. It's
they're smart. Yeah. They knew they got to know you a little bit, right? And they were like, "This guy will be great." And
he
also has have experience as a trainer. As a no-brainer almost.
Correct. And then the yin, the yang, and then the yin was Al Snow. Al Snow. They cast Al Snow to be a trainer too because of his experience and his vast knowledge of training guys like me. And Al is a Type B personality. I'm a Type A, and well, sometimes A and B clashes, and we did. And we clashed, you know, and those kids, I mean, I call them kids now, they're grown men and women, but, you know, they saw it. They saw the heat between me and Al because I didn't agree with some of the coddling I thought Al did. You know, and the trainers that we had, it was myself, it was Al Snow. Now, you know, Al Snow, I think, came off like he was the lead trainer, you know. I don't know about that. But that's kind of was, I think, the way WWE positioned him at that time, and Al kind of ran with that. That, too, ticked me off. You know, so I'm all about motivation and being angry, and I got a gigantic chip on my shoulder, if you couldn't tell by now.
Well, that's probably why they made it that way, too, just to piss you off even more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For great TV.
Absolutely. And I was younger, more immature. I was extremely competitive, pugnacious mentality. And that's kind of was my mentality. I kind of had, you know, I was just kind of balls to the wall attitude, angry at all times, and it worked. And if you remember, like some of the other trainers besides Al Snow, it was Tori. Remember Tori?
The
pretty hot blonde chick.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Along with Jacqueline. Very tough. You know, Jacqueline was a chick from Texas, wrestler with a lot of experience. Jackie Moore, you know, Jacqueline. Yeah, she was just.
Well, you know, that's more my type, as you know me personally. Yes.
God.
I had a thing for Jack. I liked her. I thought she was hot.
Do we really need to hear your sexual preference in females? Or
I didn't make it sexual.
It's probably the wrong word. I don't know. I don't care about your personal life in this moment.
Let's be honest. Everybody likes all the divas are all hot anyway. So.
Yeah. So I mean, right now this is about me.
But you digress.
No, I did that earlier. I'm done digressing. But this is about me. Don't you? Every show is about me. I went over this. This is all about me. What about me?
What about Maven?
Yeah. What about Maven? What about Raven? No. So and Maven. He did really well in this thing.
Yes.
But no. What I'm saying is the Al Snow Taz thing. It was like, you know, there was a lot of times where we were butting heads, man, off camera, and I'm a little surprised WWE didn't air more of that stuff. There was an argument that we had, Al and I, over after a few weeks of the training that I totally disagree with what he was teaching them and how he was handling. And I said, Al, you're coddling them, you're becoming their friend, as opposed to, you know, forgetting your roots and how long it took you to do. He's like, ah, Taz, you're too much of a hard ass. I'm paraphrasing. We got into an argument about this. You know, in front of the other trainers, in front of John Gaborik. Now, John Gaborik, you know, his role, that's kind of how I should just kind of touched on this earlier. That's kind of how I think he was initially brought into the WWE, was with Tough Enough One. Huh. And he was a figurehead on the show on camera. People remember seeing him from there. And the guy, people that don't know who he is, he's the guy who looks like Big Van Vader without the mask. So anyway.
He'd probably look like him if he had the mask on. He'd look like
maybe
him.
So he would try to be the guy to, you know, be the referee between me and Al off air. And just say, you know, all right, guys, chill, you know, calm down. And, you know, he was the producer of the show, whatever his title was. He's on the credits, you know, Gaborik. So,
hey, if anybody in WWE is listening, if you still have that footage, it'd be great to put that on the network.
I think they...
I'd like to see it.
Dude, what are you talking about? I think I've been getting tweets for weeks.
I'm talking about the footage that you said that didn't air.
Oh.
I'm talking about that.
So you're telling WWE how to do their business now?
I'm making a suggestion as a fan.
So you think you could run the network? That's what you're saying?
No.
You implied it.
I can't even run your show. How am I going to run a network? Let's be honest. I mean, I'm not. You know, I don't live in an alternate reality.
That was accurate right there.
I'm skating by, buddy.
Bro, you are every day. People have no idea. I've made you a cult hero on the internet.
Oh my God!
On the Twitter machine, you're over like Oreo cookies. So anyway,
that's big.
So you know, I know. So, any more questions, dude? Could you hit me?
Yeah,
I told people to tweet me. I want to.
I think this one guy. I think maybe he wants to be on Tough Enough. So he's asking you your opinion. How can someone separate themselves? Let me tell you who it is first. Lance D. White, at Lance D. White. How can a person separate himself from the pack and get noticed?
Well, it's an obvious good question, but that's not really what I'm looking for here.
All right.
No, I don't want to blow the guy off because you mentioned him.
I was going to answer it for him.
No.
So, with all my experience.
Okay. I can't believe that you're effing up looking through questions people asked me from a couple days ago that you can't even find the right questions.
I can't multitask.
You can't task. Forget multi. You can't task. Hold on. I need to answer that cat's question.
Yes.
I mean, you, how do you separate yourself from the pack? Well, that's the obvious thing. That's the tough thing. You got to try to be different, but you got to stay with the base. You got to show athleticism. You got to show that you have chops on the microphone that you could talk. You got to show character. You got to be relaxed. You can't take yourself too serious. But you got to stick out somehow. It's tough thing. Please give me a legitimate question.
All right.
I'm looking at myself.
Nelson, at Wall Street Superstars with ST, not spelled out street. Okay, here's one, Taz. Were you ever nice to them off camera?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
No,
Taz
really
is like same on or off. I can tell you right now, even on the mic here with me, he hates me off the mic too. So it's the same thing.
It's very true. I was never really nice to them at all. I only time I was nice if one of them was banged up or got a little bit of an injury, or if someone seemed like they really wanted it, that they were looking past the cameras and they were just an athlete like Chris Nowinski. He went to Harvard. He was a Harvard football player. To be an Ivy League athlete, to be an Ivy League student is hard enough. Nevertheless, a Division I athlete, this guy was a football player, played for Harvard Crimson. And I had a certain respect for him, not just because of his academic, the level of his academics and his intellect, but that he was an athlete in college. But he had a certain thing about him where there was an arrogance about him. And I think that's just being around Ivy League cats for 4 years, you know, that could do that. But I liked him. I liked Chris because he was an athlete and he cared. Maven, another guy, it was hard not to like Maven.
Hard workers. They earned your respect.
Yeah. It's just something about Maven, just that natural charisma. You know, we all knew it right away with Maven. Really did.
He did all right for a couple years in the company. Do you know what happened to him? What happened to his career?
I don't know, but he did pretty good right early on. I don't know. I'm sure the internet has the answers for all that. But I don't know. But you don't have access to the internet. Do you have any other questions for me that my lovely fans have asked here about Tough Enough 1?
Well, that question's stupid because like it says how much was real, was you, how much was scripted. I can answer that.
I'm sure that fan appreciates you said that this question was stupid.
All right, sorry. And, you know, and he's a big fan, I know, too, at Smart Rage. No offense, buddy, but Taz is Taz, so I'm guessing that there was nothing scripted. Nobody gave you lines to say.
Dude, first of all, if you're going to address the question, why don't you ask it properly and then give the man...
Hey, Taz!
I didn't say anything character. I said just ask the question.
It's Twitter English, so it's hard to read. We saw how much was of it was you and how much was scripted.
The way you just did that was my high school education. That's how I read in high school.
Oh, boy.
And who was this from?
Smart Rage.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that guy's cool. He always tweets at me. Yeah, there was nothing scripted. I mean, the whole thing was straight shoot. I mean, really was. You know, and that was the cool thing. It was real, you know? And again, back to the Al Snow Taz stuff, I mean, a lot of people didn't, you know, I'm telling you right now, there was a lot of tense moments. I got no heat with Al. We laughed about it afterwards. But, you know, we weren't working. We were shooting, and the cameras were on us. We were mic'd. I really disagreed with how Al, I felt like he coddled them. Now, being older and being wiser, you know, I think Al handled it the right way as a trainer. He did a great job. I'm not knocking Al. I'm just trying to get back in the mindset I had back then. You know what I mean? It was a lot of fun doing this Tough Enough deal. I mean, it was a lot of fun, you know? So, I mean, and I miss it. I missed it after it was done, you know?
Here's a good one. Yeah. Matt Fish at Fish Approved. Why did they make the guys wrestle in the mud? Someone got injured hitting a hidden rock. Seems reckless.
Well, that was my deal.
So it's your fault the guy got hurt.
Yeah, basically. No, you know what? I mean, there was no, you know, it was. We wanted to give more of an entertainment feel, and they said, "Look, put these guys through like almost like a boot camp s type thing, and just let's see how tough you really are. It's like a fight in the mud. Let's see you fighting in a park here in the mud." It was a park. That's what it was. I believe that moment. It was a lot of years ago. I'm not looking at the footage, and that's why it was just to bring more of a reality feel. To see how rough and tumble some of these guys and girls were. That's the reason, you know, that's why that happened. So
some guy asked about it. You said you ripped off the Goldberg poster off the wall. They want to know if it was planted there to bury WCW, but you just saw it. You didn't know it was there.
I covered that. Yeah, I did mention that in this podcast.
But you didn't know it was there.
No, sir. No, yeah. I did not. You know, I mean, so it was like everything you saw when I barged in that house was legit real. You know,
that was Jim Caldwell, at Caldwell_Jim.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Jimbo. Jimbo!
Hey!
Hey-o! Jimbo!
All of a sudden, I turned into Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hey-o! Easy.
Pardon me.
Easy. Yeah, that's my gimmick. Hold on a minute. Yeah, but it was... Like I said, everything I did on that thing was ad-lib. I mean, the whole deal. I mean, and I was not there every day. Like, I was on the road... I was doing stuff. They would have me come back. If I was working like 7 days a week, I was wrestling. I was coming back. I was training. I mean, I had a baby at home, which I hardly saw. It was my son and my wife. I mean, I was gone working so much. You
better
know?
For the show, though, because if you stayed there too long, you might have grown and had a relationship with them. Better you just come in and hammer them.
I think you're right. It's a good point. And you know what? Now thinking back on it, hindsight 2020, maybe that's what WWE was thinking, because they understood my schedule was hectic at that time. You know, and I think because of the character that I was on that show was so real, that people to this day, you know, years later, with this new Tough Enough, you know, they're hoping that I was going to be part of this thing, you know, and we'll talk about that. Let's take a quick break. Come right back from the break and talk a little bit about the new Tough Enough coming up, and maybe Seth can handle this Twitter thing. Give me a couple more questions that you guys asked. All right, we'll be right back real quick. I'm Taz. Sit tight. Let me get this straight. It's May, and your fantasy baseball team's already in the toilet. Well, look, don't sit back there and second-guess yourself. Get back in the game and check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite daily fantasy baseball site where you can win huge cash prizes every day. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, no slogging through long season to collect your winnings, just instant cash, instant gratification. It's like a new season every time you play. Simply pick two pitchers and eight position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to a massive payday. In fact, last year, Peter from Colorado won $1 million at DraftKings in one day just by playing fantasy baseball. That is nuts. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in huge at DraftKings. Now it's up to you, dude. Check it out. Hurry to DraftKings.com. Enter my promo code TAZ. That's Taz. TAZ to play for free. You can be part of a $300 million in cash and prizes awarded to you this season. That's nuts. Use the promo code TAZ for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings.com.
Board, you gotta do your main job as the producer, and then you're a superstar on the air.
Stop making fun of me. Rolling.
That might be good. And we're back!
Oh, sorry.
Right, we are back right here, and hopefully you guys didn't hear what I just said to Seth because he pissed me off. All right, we're talking about Tough Enough 1, wrapping this bad boy up, but I wanna say, like, I think the new Tough Enough, well, before we got that, you said there was one you wanted to ask me, another question on Twitter.
Mitch,
do you have instincts? Your instincts suck. They suck. You have zero instincts. You got to ask the question.
I need to raise
you have
it.
No feeling. You have no...
You suck the life out of me. Christ. I'm coming all excited to work with you Monday. It's like, you suck. I'm like, oh.
Sound like my wife. She says I pull the life out of her, too, unfortunately. I'm a horrible everything. I'm a horrible person.
Sorry, Mrs. Tez.
Go ahead. What's the question?
Mitch Bozeman. At Mitch Bozeman. Did you get heat backstage for Tough Enough 1? Seems many didn't like the concept.
Heat backstage. I got praised. The boys loved it because
you're ripping.
I was shooting on these people. I was mad at them. Because these guys were like me, the guys and girls in our locker room, the legitimate superstars and wrestlers and all, they paid their dues as I did, and they felt like they were entitled too. I mean, so again, it was a lot of years ago. We all had different attitudes back then, but
it was the attitude era.
I don't know exactly. Yeah. Where are the cats getting that many didn't like the concept. Who didn't like the concept?
Dave Meltzer told them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I just made that up. One more for you. Jeremy LeFrancois at JFX Jeremy. What's your opinion on the Bob Holly incident? I'll refresh your memory. Matt Capitelli, he busted him up pretty good in the ring. Got real stiff on him. Do you remember that? I think it was from season two.
Yeah, I think I was involved with that show too.
Yeah.
I believe. Yep. You know what? It's a good question. Bob's a rough, tough dude, and I consider Bob a friend. Haven't talked to him in a long time. Wrestled him a whole bunch. Always a professional. Respect him. We're from that same era, you know, that same generation. It might not be the pop thing to say. I like Matt Capitelli. I thought Matt was another guy that, you know, a legitimate athlete and all. But I had no problem at that time with Bob Holly doing his deal. I mean, you know, it's the way some guys get trained. And
was he stiff in the ring with you too? I mean,
well, Bob,
you just stiff with everybody, right?
I was too.
Yeah.
I mean, so we both were. We would just beat the crap out of each other, and you know, that's business. Bob was a little, but he wasn't, listen, they're stiff and then they're stupid stiff. Bob was not stupid stiff. He was a professional.
Right. He wouldn't have been in the company that long if he was.
Of course
right.
not. He wouldn't have been a pro as many years as he was. I mean, you know, being stiff in the ring is one thing. Punching a guy in his nose and breaking his nose, or kicking a guy in the balls, or getting a guy in an armbar and tearing his tricep because you're too stiff on an armbar, that's stupid stiff. But you know what? If a guy drop kicks me and catches me in the jaw and almost knocks my esophagus back through my back into my throat, that's stiff, and that's okay. You know?
RVD.
Van Damme's done that to me, yes. And Van Damme will kick your throat out at times, yes. But, you know, that's and I was the same way with suplexes, that clotheslines and cross faces, you know. And it's just, you got to be, you know, this is not ballet, as we say. And I don't want to get off topic here, but I want to talk a little bit real quick here about the new Tough Enough, briefly. And, you know, the new we've heard about it. And a lot of people thought I was going to be part of this thing. And you know, I'm not. And I'm totally cool with it. I mean, I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, WWE's saying it's going to be a different, innovative, different style of doing Tough Enough. That's what I'm hearing. They got a judges panel with Hulk Hogan, Paige, Daniel Bryan, which I think that's just a great mix of generations and a male female and
yes.
Of course yes right, and of course Hulk Hogan, even though he's been in the business for so many years and a household name and arguably the most successful pro wrestler of all time, the most popular pro wrestler of all time or superstar of all time, Hulk still stays on top of the business. So don't think that this guy's got old school thinking. He's old school mixed with new school. And that saying, by the way, is something that Kevin Dunn said to me when he first talked to me about doing Tough Enough 1. I said, man, I don't know. I might be a little too old school for this. He goes, you need to become new school with old school ethics and values. You need to become more new school. This was back, whatever the year he said, 2001.
He must have liked you to give you that advice and stuff. He must have saw something in you.
Yeah, well, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying, hopefully you blossom soon. Something comes up. Yeah. Is it? I don't want to.
I was a hard worker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, yeah. You know. Blue collar. Red Hook. You could say Hogan was maybe one of the first sports entertainers because you're doing the Tonight Show, doing a lot of stuff.
I agree. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think even before that, Gorgeous George probably was another guy, but before the penetration of Strong TV and all.
Right.
I think you're right about that with Hogan. I mean, because he went on those other TV shows and stuff like that, got out of the smoke-filled arenas with the spotlight over the ring and that old-school wrestling mentality. And the judges on the new Tough Enough, I just went over the judges, I'm sorry. The host is Chris Jericho, I believe, and I think Renee Young is going to be part of some kind of a hosting or interviewing role, I'm assuming. That's what I'm hearing and seeing.
And they're doing this down in the Performance Center, right?
Yeah, down in Orlando, which is great. That place, I've never been there, but I heard it's awesome. So, you know, it's got everything you need in that place. So, and the coaches will be Booker T, Lita, and Billy Gunn. Again, three folks from my generation who I have respect for, all three of them.
You worked with Booker and worked with Billy?
I worked with all of them except for Lita.
They say Billy's like real, just a tremendous athlete.
Oh, my God. Billy Gunn is, dude, I don't even know what to say. Guy should have been in the NFL, I mean, or in the NBA or something. The guy is just amazing, amazing athlete. You know, he and I have something else in common. His son's a lacrosse player also. His son plays college lacrosse down in Florida. My son's not in college yet. He's in high school, but he's another lacrosse dad. But Billy is an amazing, amazing athlete. And if his son is half the athlete Billy is, I'm sure he's a hell of a lacrosse player. But and I'm sure he is if he's playing college lacrosse. But the thing is, Billy Gunn's just a freak athlete, really is.
The reason I said it is because Kevin Nash made a comment after WrestleMania, and you know, they had the whole Sting, Triple H thing, and Billy Gunn ran and goes, man, I forgot how Billy can go.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that.
Billy was one of those guys, when you wrestle Billy, you know, you had to bring your A game because he was going to amp it up, and you had to really move your ass in that ring. Always was a fan of Lita, know her a long time, and just nothing but respect for her, and just she's just awesome, and I think she'll do a great job as a coach along with Billy. Billy, I think, does some training down there at the Performance Center anyway, as it is.
He was on the E60 thing.
That's right, he was, and that was awesome, by the way. And Booker T, you know, obviously, you know, has his own promotion, as many of you guys know, in Houston, I believe, and he does a great job as a trainer. Another guy who knows so much, been around so many years, you know, another multi-time world champion and all that stuff. So I think you got credibility in all three of those coaches. I think that's a great lineup. No one's going to throw a flag on that lineup of judges or coaches and the host also. So I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty cool. I got to tell you the truth. So, You know, that's really it, dude. So we're going to wrap this bad boy up. Hope you liked my insight to you guys on Tough Enough 1. Pull back the curtain a little bit and gave it to you. So until next time, for Seth, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Perfect. I am Taz. You are not. Adios.